Absolute Rally with Tony Simpson and Ryan Champion.
Hello everyone, welcome to Absolute Rally. It's Wednesday night, where else would you be? If you're listening to us on the podcast, you could be anywhere, so don't judge, it's alright. Just thought I'd put that out there. But if you are listening on the podcast, thank you so much for downloading us. The downloads are going up as the weeks go by, and we really, really do appreciate it. And we're trying to keep it different. We're trying to do different things. As you can see tonight, we've got an African champion on tonight who has been probably one of our most precious guests already. I can say that because Craig Thornley is also a friend of mine and also a former co-driver of Ryan Champions. But he's put me straight on the description of what he's won tonight. Three text messages so far. And as I pointed out, Solberg wasn't that precious. But still, there you go. It's absolutely great to be back with you anyway. We're going to come back. Very, very shortly, because we're going to have Ryan Champion, who is somewhere in a hotel room. Ryan, we were contemplating having a feature called Wiz Ryan, because Ryan seems to be in a hotel room on his own. At least I think he's on his own. Most times that we have him on these days, but still, there you go. I'll drop this down. I'll see whether Ryan Champion's there. Ryan Champion, are you there in a hotel room by any chance?
I am here in another random hotel room. Yes, I am.
Oh, that's all right then. We're back. It's live. It's Absolute Rally, and I've just been telling people what's coming up. We try to keep it a little bit different. Obviously, we've got an African champion on tonight. We've got probably the test driver to end all test drivers, Terry Cabey, joining us, and we've also got Alex Yusimo. Now, the reason why I left Alex the last, because I've had a little bit of stick on Twitter.
Haven't.
I have, honestly. Right, I'm going to bring that down a little bit. About my pronunciation of people's surnames. To be fair, it's been founded, and I completely and utterly agree with it. I listen back to the programmes, and obviously, as I pointed out at the time, that I'm doing about four different things sometimes, so I'm kind of speed reading. And sometimes I don't quite... I'm reading it and saying it out loud, not at the same time, whereas most people have that luxury of being able to read something, kind of compute it and then regurgitate it. I'm kind of doing it on the fly, as it were. So tonight, Ryan, you're going to say all the names. I'm not even going to mention a thing.
Well, I can cope with Craig Thorley. I know how to pronounce that one.
Yeah, no, I'm all right with that one as well. Alex Yusimo. Now, I think that's how you say it. Would you agree with that?
I don't know. I went for Gelsomino, but I could be wrong on that one. I don't know.
You'd do that to me, wouldn't you, Ryan? You'd just be contrary just for the sake of it. How about Terry Cabey? We both agreed on that one.
Yeah, I think we're okay with that one. Yeah.
All right, cool. As ever, we always start off and we go straight into the news. A couple of things that I wanted to touch upon. As ever, I'd like to pass the baton on from the previous week's show. Thoughts going out to Chris Ingram. Massive off he had on Zlin last weekend, and it looked a very, very nasty one. I was in contact with him over the weekend, and he's a very lucky boy. I know I've seen the video of that, and I hate watching those videos. I'm a massive rally fan, and I know some people kind of search out these things, and I was sent it to take a look at, and it's one of those ones where you go, oh, that sickly feeling. But he texted me pretty quick to let him know he was okay, which was great news. Did you see that one at all, Ray?
I haven't actually seen the accident. No, I did see the pictures after the on social media, and it definitely looked like a nasty accident, and definitely not something you want, and not something you want as a young driver either, is it? You know, he's trying to make his way in the sport, and he's trying to build his confidence, and obviously that doesn't help the confidence when you have a big accident like that. But as we know in this sport, if you're going to push and you're going to try and compete at the front in any given championship, then these are the risks you take. And unfortunately, Chris just got caught out, but I'm sure he'll bounce back.
Yeah, I've spoke to him. I spoke to him a little bit earlier on. I know he's working hard. He's trying to put something together for GB, and we'll get him on before then. Anyway, we'll speak to them before. I know he's listening tonight. Chris, enjoy the program. We're going to go back to ERC, and obviously Jan Kopecky. Are we agreed on that pronunciation? Because even Craig Breen wasn't sure last week.
But if that's what Craig reckons, and Craig knows him better than we do, so we'll go with that one. Yeah,
I'm comfortable with that one so far. A comfortable win on Zlin. I think to say he was more than match fit after winning Germany by about 3 minutes, I think it's probably an understatement. His home rally. And one thing that I wanted to, again, I love this because we've got regular listeners and stuff like that. And I had a tweet in just before the programme started, funnily enough. And it was from Where is the gentleman? Jason Anthony. Thanks, Jason. Thanks, Jason, for tweeting in and talking about drivers that have perhaps just missed out on making that next kind of step up. And Jan Kopecky, I suppose, kind of falls into that category a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, you're probably right. He had his fair share of World Championship rallies in a WRC car with a Fabia, didn't he? With a Fabia World Rally car, and always been loyal to Skoda, and they've been loyal to him. So, yes, maybe missed out on, you know, the absolute top line drive. But having said that, he's made a fantastic career in the sport with Skoda, and he continues to do so, and he's still at the forefront of their programs. Yes, maybe not had that that front running chance at world level, but certainly won a whole number of championships across the world, been part of their Asia Pacific program and obviously their European program, and now competing in his home championship as well. But I did notice on the coverage at the weekend that there was another pronunciation of Kopecky on the TV coverage, which was one I hadn't heard, but there we go. At least we think we've got that one sorted.
I'm nervous because the gentleman that is now leading the championship, and he's got a 23-point lead, I think, on Craig at the moment, is deep breath. Kajtanovic, that's where we're going. Now, even Craig, I remember when Craig was on very, very early on this year, he kind of, I think he abbreviates it in a way to kind of keep on top of it a little bit. So I'm holding my hands up on that. But he's now got a 23-point lead on Craig, which is obviously going to put Craig under massive pressure. I think is the two rounds of ERC left now?
Yes, certainly coming towards the end of the year now, and it's an uphill task now for Craig, isn't it? And it's obviously not what he was wanting when we were talking to him last week. He was really looking for a strong result, and certainly to beat Kajtanovic, because he's turned out to be his big rival. And I think actually Kajtanovic has been a real surprise. You know, everywhere he's gone very, very well. And I was on the circuit of Ireland and I was really impressed with him there. The first time he'd been to Ireland, and he was bang on the pace and fighting for the win all the way through, just missing out by a few seconds. So you have to say he's a worthy champion, if not maybe the man we would like to have seen take that trophy.
Well, hopefully, fingers crossed, we will, Craig will get a little bit of luck going his way. He definitely deserves a little bit of luck, let's be honest. I'm going to crack on now through the news. Some news broke over the last couple of days as well, by the looks of things, whether it's news, whether it's a rumour, I'm not entirely sure, but it would make a little bit of sense, I think, with all what's going on. Hyundai, we should have a section now just dedicated to Hyundai. It looks like Hayden is going to have a full program next year, which is great news. Obviously, he's been working very, very hard towards that. But I just wonder how that's going to work. I just wonder whether Danny's going to end up perhaps with that reduced program, because he's still under contract for 2016 also.
Yeah, like you said, Hyundai does seem to be in our chats every week, but you know, they're a big player in the World Championship now, so I guess that's maybe no surprise. They couldn't pass over on Hayden Padden, could they? You know, he's shown fantastic speed this year in a car that was a slight step behind the full factory cars, if you like, or the latest spec factory cars. And they had to sign him up, didn't they? Because we know Toyota are now confirmed that they're coming in. They're going to need drivers. I think it was in Hyundai's interest to get in there early. And like you say, maybe Danny Sordo's going to slip back a little bit, as we've seen before. But again, Sordo seems to have done a good job of reinventing himself a number of times. But, I can't see him getting another frontline opportunity. But I'm sure they'll probably still want to keep him, certainly for tarmac outings.
Absolutely. I was going to touch upon, speaking of tarmac, I was going to touch upon very, very briefly about the Irish Tarmac Championship and the move to R5. But to say there's so many grey areas still in it, I'm actually going to stay away from it. I had a chat with somebody off the record over the weekend, and it's still slightly unclear what's going on. So I'm going to stay away from that. But there seems to be an influx of R5 cars going over there, and whether that's going to be to the detriment or not of some of the people with world cars over there, I really don't know. So it's something which we're going to skirt completely and utterly past, I think, for this evening. One thing I wanted to say was congratulations, David Higgins, 13th win on the trot for Subaru America. Travis was second on the last round of the Rally America Championship. Also, Paolo Andreucci, 9-time Italian champion. Just let's just take that in mind. 9-time Italian champion.
I just thought you were brave going for another difficult surname there. But yeah, he's one of those drivers that's just been around for years, hasn't he, in the European Championship and particularly the Italian Championship. And again, always at the forefront of it in a lot of cool cars. And yeah, amazing performance to win any national championship 9 times. But something like the Italian Championship's always been very, very competitive. And the Italian Championship has certainly seen, you know, quite a number of drivers that have really stuck at the front level for a long time. And unfortunately, for various reasons, we haven't seen that in the UK for a while. But in Italy, there's still those works drives at the front, and they have a fantastic field and great competition. So to win it 9 times is, incredible result.
I'd say so. That's an understatement. One thing I wanted to catch up on, there's no car sound this week. Sorry about that, everyone. Rye let me down. And
well, I thought we were making it bi-weekly. You know, we don't want to go overkill on it. So we'll make it bi-weekly.
It was kind of your baby, and I'll be honest with you, you've just kind of left it to one side. So
doing it bi-weekly, if you
know. All right. If you're doing it bi-weekly, that's fine. You know, I don't want to turn it into a Jeremy Kyle episode. You know, if that's what you want to do, that's your call. It's your baby. Not a problem. I'm gonna go brave again here as well with another pronunciation. Stefan Leboeuf. I don't know how close that is. Really don't. But everybody knows who I'm talking about. Looks like he's got another outing after a very, very solid performance on Rally Germany. He's being given Rally Corsica, which is obviously great news for him. We're talking about young hopefuls and everything else. He seems to have put himself in that position to be the popular Frenchman in a French car again.
Yeah, and like we said, you know, Citroën have a history of backing young French drivers, and this one's no exception. And Leferbe seems to have done a great job so far, obviously winning the Junior World Championship and then stepped up into a World Rally car and didn't make any mistakes, and that was a key thing. Just like I said, I mentioned it last week, it is a fickle world, though, because Sébastien Chardonnay was the shoe-in for the next Citroën drive, and then he seems to have fallen from grace a little bit. So it's... We've talked about it over the last few weeks. You're a young driver, you get the opportunity, you have to make the most of it because it can slip through your fingers very, very easily.
You're not wrong. While I do some pressing of buttons and everything else, we're going to go to a very, very quick break, and all being well, we're going to come back with Alex Chisimo.
This is Absolute Rally with Tony Simpson and Ryan Champion.
That one's a lot quicker than what I thought it was going to be. I don't know about you, but still, there you go. We still haven't got Alex lined up yet, so we are working on that. We are pressing some buttons, but I'll tell you what, we'll switch stuff around a little bit. If you want to do kind of your any other businesses while I press some buttons, that would be ace.
Any other business? Well, I just think that, we're getting to a key stage of the WRC now. And it's going to be interesting to see if anybody can actually put Ogier under any pressure. But he really has become the steamroller once again, hasn't he, this year? It's very, very tough for any other driver to beat him consistently or even to compete with him consistently. Latvala has been close again at various times. We've seen great speed from Chris Meek. We've just talked about seeing Hayden Padden coming along. But we really want to see somebody knocking on the door of Sébastien Ogier every rally, don't we? So it's tough to see anybody doing that at the minute, and certainly tough to see anybody beating him to the championship this year.
Yeah, I think silly season is upon us as well. As another article wrote today with regards to the situation with Chris, and again, it seems to be a bit of a popular thing. And I think, again, we keep on coming back to the same thing. He is the only one that seems to take it to Volkswagen. And while his teammate is, I suppose, comfortably 30-odd points ahead of him, his teammate's got nowhere near the other Volkswagens. In fact, nobody else has got anywhere near the Volkswagens. Perhaps the Hyundais fleetingly at times have worried the Volkswagens. I seem to remember Hayden doing it. Obviously, Thierry's done it last year. But certainly, Chris has been the most consistent of drivers that has put the VW boys under pressure.
And as we've said week in, week out, you know, he's showing that speed, like you say, Hayden possibly could with a bit more development be on that level, but Chris is the only one there banging on the door. But he still needs results, as we've said, and let's just hope he can bring home some solid results towards the end of the year, because I think if he can, he's done enough to you know, still keep his place in the WRC. And you know, he's getting more and more experience in a top level car. He will build on that, but like we said, he has to put in the results now. You know, he can't keep making those mistakes, as he's very well clear of. There's nobody harder on Chris Meek than the man himself, and he well knows what he has to do. Let's just hope that the results come his way.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. I think all being well, I've pressed some buttons, and we've got Alex online. Yeah, I think we're somewhere close, which is good. So we are going to go to another cheeky quick break, and then we're going to come back all being well with Alex.
Team Coordinate, your perfect travel partner for all your European, Manx and Irish motorsport travel. Whether you're a competitor, marshal or a motorsport fan, we have the connections and discounts available for ferry travel to and from the UK. Team Coordinate, we can cater for individuals, teams or group bookings. Working with organisers of race, rally and classic touring events, we take away the hassle of travel with bikes, cars, trailers and trucks. Accompanied or unaccompanied. Team Coordinate. Call Dane or Donna now on 441904-766-787 or email us on info@teamcoordinate.com.
Welcome back to Absolute Rally. We are still having some technical issues of getting Alex Yosimo to join us, but all being well, we're going to press some buttons and basically get him on with us very, very soon. If you can just bear with us, I do apologise for this. Ryan, one yes. thing I wanted to ask you about was the inspiration behind some of the cars that you've chose for the noises, because they have been very, very specific. Now, the last one caused a little bit of... some of the answers we got were very specific, to the point of it's the Sierra Sapphire Cosworth in Tough Mac colours, which I loved. That was so specific, it was untrue.
I guess it's rally car sounds. It's a Bobble Hatter subject, isn't it? Which, yes, I guess I fit in that category. But you want sounds of iconic cars. But at the end of the day, if you haven't got pictures, they need to be slightly distinctive for people to get them. And the first one, the 037, fantastic supercharged noise, and quite a unique sound in itself. Then we had Jean Randy.
This is Alex.
But the buttons are being pressed. Alex.
Hello.
Hello. Welcome to Absolute Rally.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Oh, we've had some issues trying to connect you and get you. And Ryan's just been covering for me as I've been pressing buttons. So apologies for you just coming straight into the program. But welcome to the program. Fantastic profile picture on your Skype, which is a koala bear. So I've got Ryan's cheeky face looking at me on one picture, and the koala bear on the other, which is quite cute in a strange way. But there you go. So welcome to the program, and I know you know Ryan very well, very well. Ryan, Alex has finally joined us.
Yeah, good evening, Alex. Good to speak to you.
Hello, Ryan. Hello, guys.
Hi. Right, Ryan, I know you've got some bits and pieces that you want to ask Alex about, and I've got some bits and pieces, and we're getting lots of bits and pieces on Twitter. So while I sort that stuff out, if you could take it away, that'd be ace.
Yeah, Alex, I mean, obviously you've been competing at international level for a number of years now, and I just wanted to start off really with Rally America, with the American Championship. How's that evolved? How have you seen it? You know, you've seen some big manufacturers come and go from the American Championship, and how do you think the championship is now, and how's the health of the championship going forward?
Well, compared to, let's say, 10, 12 years ago, which is when I started competing in the Rally America Championship, back then it was actually sanctioned by a different authority, so it was called SCCA Pro Rally. But it's been Rally America since 2005. So, yeah, just like you said, we've seen a lot of manufacturers come and go, a lot of top drivers come and go. We've seen the coverage of the championship being a little bit up and down. Obviously, we had a very strong TV package in the late part of the last decade. Nowadays, unfortunately, the championship is not featured on television anymore, but what you have is that in the last 4, 5, 6 years, there has been high-profile athletes and drivers. In the case of Travis Pastrana and then Ken Block, that have participated in those events, so they raised the profile of the championship, and the championship has enjoyed a lot of coverage on the social media side of things. But it's always. Unfortunately, Rally America is always that championship that could be, but it never does the jump that it deserves to have. And I guess it's part of a bit of the struggle that the sport of rallying is having all over the world, and it's not as easy as it used to be 10, 15, 20, 30 years ago, and there aren't as much money as sponsors that there used to be many years ago.
And like you said, a lot of these championships go through cycles. We've seen it in our own British championship as well, you know, the peaks and the troughs. But obviously, you mentioned Ken Block there. You've been competing with Ken for 10 years now, I see. And obviously, Ken has his own fantastic following. But you've done some great rallies in that time with Ken. What would be your highlights of the time you've spent with him, and what would be the key results you remember?
Well, obviously, I personally, I was talking to my wife about it this morning. She's obviously a professional co-driver as well, and I was going through some results over the past years. The seventh place WRC in Mexico of 2 years ago is the highlight. We won many rallies together in various championships, like American, Canadian, New Zealand, and so on. But the top seventh place in WRC Mexico 2 years ago was the highlight, and we've been working together for now 11 years, and we started when, you know, there was nothing and there were no sponsors and there were, you know, two white suits and a white Subaru back in 2005, and things moved on, and then, you know, with the Subaru Rally Team USA ride the following year, and then being associated with amazing sponsors like Monster Energy and Subaru back then. And now, since 2010, Ken has been a driver for Ford. So I've seen that progression. And yeah, there has been many good results, many bad results. And but the progression from 2005 all the way until, you know, for example, this year we won a round of the New Zealand Championship, and then the many top tens in WRC. That has been very rewarding for me, because you start with a driver, and as a co-driver, maybe sometimes you tend, you know, to drift and work with the other drivers. But we stuck together for many years and went from small state events here in North America all the way to WRC top 10 finishes. So it's been quite challenging, but it's been very rewarding at the same time.
Now, you mentioned the Ford Link. Obviously, you've competed in the Focus WRC and the Fiesta WRC, and now you have the hybrid function Hoon vehicle. Tell us a little bit about that. How does that compare to a WRC car that we might know a little bit
well better? Yeah, it's a funny name that the boys in our marketing department came up with a couple years ago, because that car was used for rallying, but as well for Gymkhana and for rallycross. So it was indeed a hybrid vehicle that we would change based on the competition that we had to do that specific week. It then became too much of a work, and it was a good idea, but it involved too much work and too much stress on that vehicle. So now there is a couple of vehicles that are specifically used, you know, the rally cross car, and the what you mentioned before, the hybrid car, is now just a rally car. But the major change and differences from a war rally car is that actually it's a Fiesta war rally car, which, as you know, in the World Championship and FIA regulation, has a 1600 turbo engine. But this particular car has got a 2-liter turbo engine out of the Focus war rally car. So it's quite a powerful car, very torquey. And it's a car that fits few championships regulations all over the world, like Canada, North America events, Rally America, but also the New Zealand Championship, which is where we competed two times this year.
Now, from a very powerful 2-liter turbo Fiesta to a not so powerful 1-liter turbo Fiesta, you've been competing in the Drive D-Mac Championship this year with Will Hudson, a young driver who's new to WRC. And how's that been going, and how's he finding life in WRC?
Well, first of all, let's mention worth to mention the 1 liter turbocharged EcoBoost that the Ford Fiesta and the D-Mac is using this year. And I gotta say, I was very surprised from the first test that we did at Greystock Forest, the home of Hemsport, all the way until the last event in Germany. That is an amazing piece of engineering. A three-cylinder, 1 liter turbocharged. And actually, when you are on stage and it's on stage mode and launch control and everything, it does not feel like such a small engine that it is indeed. But it feels like almost like a 1400 or 1600 turbo engine. They've done an amazing job at Ford, at M-Sport, developing that car. Enjoyable to drive on gravel or tarmac, and I'm happy that we've done those few events. And speaking about Will, yeah, it's been obviously a tough year with three crashes on the first three events, but the last round we managed to finish fourth in DMAC. Took a bit of a conservative drive, and it was the first time for Will on tarmac. But it's the same story that many rally enthusiasts, sometimes they tend to forget that drivers like Ken Block, drivers like Will Hudson, they come from the United States rallying, which I like to say sometimes is like a bobsled team that came from Jamaica. Remember that movie?
Yes.
I forget what it's called. You know what I mean? Historically a country that has got much rally history. And when you think about Rally America, still only has one pass recce, the drivers are not able to develop their notes as well as they are in other championships. So drivers, I like to always say, drivers like Ken and Will, especially Ken, they done really well considering where their background and where they come from rally-wise.
You've just touched upon something I was going to ask you about, Alex, and it was the Gemba note system. Now, for the uninitiated who listen to our program, if you can explain the Gemba note system to our listeners, because that's what's used, isn't it, in Rally America?
Right. It is actually a very good system that produces a very good consistent pace notes, and it's developed by a friend of mine. His name is Arne Johansson from Gemba, Sweden, and they are created by a computer that is installed in the car, and obviously gets some feedback from the driver and co-driver that are producing the pace notes, just on a normal recce that happens a week or 2 weeks before the event. And then they are provided to the competitors in Rally America Championship, which then are allowed one pass recce. So the system is good, is consistent. But as you teach me, you're a rally driver, and you know that your own made pace notes are always going to be more personal, and you're going to be able to develop them more when you're allowed to pass recce. And unfortunately, that doesn't happen in Rally America yet. And personally, I've been competing in WRC since 2008 and quite consistently since 2010. We all know how important it is the most important thing, the fact to be able to produce as a driver, to produce a good, consistent and fast paced note, because that allows your speed and your consistency on the stage to be at the best as possible. So that is a bit of a drawback, and that penalizes the American drivers. In this particular case, the two American drivers that have made it into WRC, but it is what it is.
The system is very similar to what we have over here. They're called route notes or safety notes over here. So the get out is that they are not pace notes. They are route notes, and they are designed to describe the corner as opposed to the speed that you can go through the corner, around the corner, if you like. So as I say, it's a system which I think is now being implemented over here, certainly in the UK, over in Ireland as well. But one thing I did want to mention, and Ryan touched upon it before, you have to be the most loyal co-driver in the WRC and in the world of rallying, because as you sat with Ken pretty much for 10 years, and I know you sat with, I think you did WRC2 last year, was it?
Yes, I did WRC2 with an Arab driver for a couple of events, yes.
Yeah, and obviously you're with Will this year. Now, most of the co-drivers that Ryan and I have had over the last 20 years, go and sit with anybody. They'll go with anybody. But you seem to be quite settled and you seem to be quite loyal. Can you tell us how you can get that loyalty into other co-drivers for Ryan and myself?
Well, I gotta say that I've been pretty lucky because after a few years, good sponsors came on board when I was working with Ken, and that then guarantees you obviously a consistent income. So there was no reason for me to look for other rides. Now, then when Ken started focusing on rallycross for the past couple of years and less rallying, I found myself needing other jobs. So I've been working with other drivers as well. And yeah, there has been up to 6 drivers last year, and this year has only been a couple of drivers. But it is my job, and you got to take all the opportunities that you can get. And then working with Ken it's been an excellent job for the past 5-6 years, and I'm grateful to the sponsors that backed us and they continue to do when we do rallying, because yes, he may be focusing on rallycross a lot, but when he does rallies, I do get a phone call and I get to work with him, and it's always a great experience. And plus this year there has been the opportunity to work with Will and introduce him to the World Championship, and hopefully that continues into next year. So yeah, it is, as a co-driver, you do prefer to work always with the same driver. It doesn't happen all the time, but working with the same driver gives you the consistency on everything, and that's what you prefer as a co-driver. Jumping from one driver to the other is never ideal, and I found myself having to do more last year and into this year. It does take some getting used to it, which I wasn't, because I was working with the same driver consistently, same driver. Now I have a more clear idea of working with different drivers that I've been doing for the past 2 years. So it's much better now. Last year was a bit of it took a little bit of getting used to.
Do you think it's made you a better co-driver, having been with Ken for such a long time now? Do you think when you're back in the car with Ken, perhaps you have a different set of eyes almost on things and gives you a sharper edge, perhaps?
Absolutely, yes. Yeah, it's been working with different drivers, and we all know how the sport is. You get to work with drivers that maybe sponsor backed, and there is plenty of money, and everything is good. And then the next event, you may be working with a driver that is working on strictly on his credit cards, and he's melting his credit cards. And then you never know when the invoice is going to be paid. But I've been lucky in the past few years. I admit that. But definitely working with different drivers gives you way more experience, because you get to work with different type of characters. And when you look at my 6 drivers last year, 2 American drivers, 1 Arab driver that spoke very little English, 1 Irish driver, 1 Australian driver. So it's just, yeah, you can't beat that. As a co-driver, you get to work with all different type of characters and personalities. So that's priceless.
Fantastic. Alex, you've been a joyful guest. Thank you for your patience while we were trying to connect you earlier. And the door is always open at Absolute Rally. Whenever you want to come on, the floor is yours, and we really do appreciate your time today.
Thank you very much. It's been awesome to be part of being your guest today and part of the show, and looking forward to doing more in the future, and keep in touch.
Will do. Thanks, Alex. Thanks for joining us. Much appreciated.
Thank you, guys.
Bye-bye. Have a great day. Take care. Bye-bye. And that was Alex Cosimo.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was. Now,
great to have him on.
It was. There was a moment there where I thought, is he still there? And I've said his name wrong, and it's going to get a bit awkward. But no, it was all right. It was all right. It was all right. I think we got away with it. Alex was great. Very, 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 very candid. Very, very open. And considering, it's strange, really, isn't it, that the whole Ken Block phenomenon, because obviously he is more known throughout the world for the Gymkhanas and everything else. And the amount of attention he gets wherever he goes with whatever he's doing, whether it's Gymkhana or whether it's rallycross or whether it's rallies. And it must be very odd for a co-driver, because probably the only other co-driver that's experienced probably the level of adulation and people wanting to be, speak to the driver is probably somebody like Sebastian Loeb. On his home event, not just any event, just on his home event, whereas Ken's got that worldwide appeal where there's just, people everywhere who want a piece of him.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, probably not even, like you said, very rarely even Sebastian Lowe, maybe even Robert Kubica in Poland or Kimi Räikkönen in Finland, you know, something like that. But yeah, like you say, it's and Alex has done a great job to be alongside Ken for so long, because obviously he's alongside one of the world's most famous drivers, not necessarily famous rally drivers, but certainly one of the world's most famous drivers, and he's just quietly got on with his job for, as we said, 10 years now.
I know. How do you get a loyal co-driver like that? Because we've got a guest coming up a bit later on who sat with you and sat with everybody. In fact, probably the only person he has sat with is me.
But he did do my very first rally with me, and he did do my last rally with me. So there is a bit of loyalty there.
Okay, fair dues. I'll take that back. Sorry, Craig. I know you're listening now, and I know you feel like you're getting a little bit of stick. It's all right. So because of those three text messages before, that's all I'm going to say. We're going to go for a very, very cheeky quick break, and then we're going to come back with probably the most respected test driver probably around. Manny, who made Subaru behind the scenes, I guess, with all the testing, what we know to be a great car and a great team by a pro drive, and now he's involved with the JRM program. But we're going to come back and we're going to talk to Terry Cabey.
Absolute Rally with Tony Simpson and Ryan Champion, every Wednesday 8 till 9 p.m. UK time. All the latest news, views and gossip from the world of rally, interviews with the biggest names, plus the best comment and insight from people who know their find us on Twitter at @absolute_rally and join the debate. Absolute Rally, every Wednesday 8 till 9 p.m. UK time, online at Fab Radio International. Absolute Rally.
And we have Terry Cabey. Welcome to Absolute Rally.
Hiya.
Hiya, you well?
Very well, thanks. And yourself?
Yeah, we're really good. Thank you so much for joining us tonight, Terry. My friend and yours, Ryan Champion, sat patiently there waiting to grill you, but in a good way. Don't worry, Terry, in a good way. But we just wanted to welcome you to the show. We've got lots of people who've been tweeting in, and also on the Facebook page. We're excited to have the legendary test driver from Subaru's heydays joining us. So, Rye, as a man with a Group A Subaru, this has surely got to be one for you.
Yeah, good evening, Terry. Good to speak to you.
And yourself, Ryan?
Obviously, you had a great career, really, with a number of manufacturers. You know, starting off with the Works Triumphs, moving through Vauxhall, and obviously you're well known for the Nissan in the 240 RS. But just looking back at your career, I mean, one result that stands out for me was when you took a Datsun 160J to fifth on the Tour de Corse. Now, Corsica is coming back into the World Championship this year, but to take that car to fifth overall in 81 must have been an incredible result and surprised a lot of people at the time, I would guess.
Well, it was, yeah. I mean, the end result was really good, and there was quite a lot of stories that happened during the event, because the original plan was that we would run a two-door coupe body shell shape. For the event, the cars at that time for Nissan was run by, well, as Datsun, as you say it was run by Andy Dawson. And Andy was going to build this two-door coupe version. And basically, they didn't have enough time to finish the car. So in the end, we did the rally in Tony Pond's Recce car, which was a Group 2 rally car. And then Tony would drive a Group 4 twin cam engined car on the rally. So all they did was put a new engine, gearbox, suspension and rear axle into Tony Pond's recce car, which was just a two valve per cylinder car, Group 2 car, and we used that. So basically it was Pondy's recce car.
So that was a great result to do that in a practice car. And then a couple of years later, you started driving the 240 RS and won El Corte Inglés, one of the biggest European Championship rallies, with Schakemeter as your teammate as well. But you took a victory there.
That's right. And that car was run partly as a semi-private entry with some support from Nissan. And the deal came about because at the time, Schaker was sponsored by Marlboro, the cigarette company, and El Corte Inglés were also sponsored partly by Marlboro. So the contact was actually through Schaker. And so Schaker got the invite to go there. At the time, his wife Yvonne was co-driving for him, and they wanted a teammate to go, and Schaker actually put my name forward. At the time, the guy that was doing the coordination for Air Team was a guy named Bob Freebro, who was himself an old driver, sort of back in the sort of 60s, 70s, and early 80s. And So we went there as teammates, really, to Schecker. I mean, Schecker was the first to admit that he was no tarmac expert, but of course he won the East African Safari something like five times. He was a really good long-distance driver on rough events. But, he did this really good turn in basically getting us the deal to go to El Corte Inglés. And, again, we was fortunate to win, partly due to the fact that day one was a little bit wet, and some of the locals were joking that we were running tyres that were far too soft compound in the evening. But they all sort of changed their mind on the second day and were following what we was doing. And we had a really good run, and we actually won the event reasonably convincingly at the end.
Now, coming forward a little bit, as Tony's already mentioned, you were involved with the Subaru World Rally Team in the height of their success, and you were probably you're an unsung hero at the time, because you were not only testing Petter Solberg's car away from the rally, but also doing his gravel notes as well. So you were really helping him behind the scenes, weren't you, during the success of Subaru?
Yeah, that's right. And at that time, when we actually ran what we called the gravel note cars, which was like a follow-on from the ice note cars that originated from Monte Carlo, where you would send a car through maybe an hour and a half before the rally car was due to do the stage to add on to their pace notes any undue surface changes, mud, water. In Monte Carlo, obviously, the ice and snow and things like that. And at that time, I first started doing that for Petter Solberg and Phil Mills in 2001. At that time, you had a reasonably free hand to drive the stages once or twice if you wanted to do that job. These days, it's much more restricted. You're only allowed to drive one pass, and they only allow those cars on the asphalt rallies. They don't allow them anymore on the gravel events. But at the time when I was in it for Petter and Phil, we could do all of the rallies throughout the World Championship, and it was quite open. So we were in a position where we would help with tyre choice, give as much information as we could. So you actually felt a real part of their sort of championship effort. And in the same way, when Petter won in 2003 the World Championship, you did actually feel as though you had played your part in him winning.
Yeah, because at the time as well, you had a real strength in depth, didn't you, of both teams and drivers that could win. It's not like nowadays where it's been dominated by one team. At that time, there was a number of teams and a number of drivers, wasn't there?
Well, that's right. I mean, even in the Subaru team itself, there was Tommy McAdam driving there for a certain period of time, Richard Burns, of course. I mean, all of these guys were really competitive. You had Marcus Grönholm out there with Peugeot, and it was more or less a case those days that you could pick the winner from maybe four or five drivers. And I think these days it's come down to the fact that certainly the last six or seven events where the winner comes from one or two drivers, okay, the others are obviously there or thereabouts, but there is one or two drivers in the World Championship at the moment that seem to be just that little bit head and shoulders above the rest.
Yeah, but away from the rallies at the time, you were, like we said, the Subaru test driver. What did evolve, and how much driving did you actually do away from the rallies?
Well, quite a bit, because at that time, and again, it's changed now because the cars tend to be more or less similar in terms of suspension and transmissions and so on that each team can actually run. But at that time, obviously, there was quite a bit of difference between the Fords and the Subarus and the Peugeots and so on. And so we all would run all of the spare equipment. So we would probably put 100, 150 kilometres on the spare gearbox and the spare rear diff and the spare suspension uprights and dampers, drive shafts. And then the mechanics would actually take all of those parts off the car, and then they would put on all of the parts that the car was due to start the rally on. And we would then do the same sort of kilometres with the start parts to make sure everything was fully bedded in, and the guys would take the data and the car would then go to the rally. So before each rally, the chassis itself had probably done sort of 250, 300k of mileage in various different guises, and obviously not all at full power, but there was different tests that we did for engine and so on. And then in between time, we would probably be working with a test team where we would do engine development. And the cars were always having something new coming along. So the test team were always running, and they ran separately. They was always running alongside the rally team. So in those days, it was myself and another driver, Dave Maslin, who would carry out all the work. The team was run by ProDrive. ProDrive used to build a more standard version of the Subaru, which was a Group N car. So they would be building quite a few new ones of those. In addition to that, some of the old WRC cars had been sold, mostly to Irish drivers, and they would come back to the workshop for rebuilds, and they would have to be run as well before they went back to the customers. So we were probably working 4 or 5 days of the week driving a combination of WRC team cars, WRC customer cars, and newly built Group N cars throughout the week. So it was much more or less a 4 or 5 day a week job.
If I can ask a question, Terry, is there a point where you consciously had a career change where you went, right, from this point forward, this is what I'm going to do? Or were you still chasing seats? Obviously, I think the last time you were out was in a Daihatsu Charade, I think it was around 93, 94 or something like that. Was that kind of, you know, you were offered the seat and you took it, but you were working towards obviously working behind the scenes? Was there a conscious decision to do that?
Well, I think after around about 1985-86, when 86 it was actually, that I decided possibly not to go with a Nissan anymore, because it was only two-wheel drive and the Group B four-wheel drive cars was coming along. And Robin Hurd at March Engineering, that's March Engineering that used to run a lot of the Indy cars, had decided to run a 6R4 Metro in some European events, which is obviously what I wanted to do. But they had actually found the sponsor. They wanted to do it and run it as a separate team. And unfortunately, it didn't actually come around. And it was April time before they made the decision not to do it. So obviously, there was no other drives available. And I was just at that point doing different bits of testing and various things for different teams. The Daihatsu was basically the last car that was factory supported, I guess, that I drove. And that was, I think, actually 1989 we did the RAC, and then 1990 we did the British Championship. And again, there was an intention to continue running with that car, but there was a change in management at Daihatsu, and the person that became in control of the PR department at that point didn't want to go ahead with the rally program, so that basically faltered a little bit. And then I spent probably 6 or 7 years working at the John Watson Racing School at Silverstone as an instructor, and still doing any driving that I could, but it was mainly development or testing or that type of thing, and not really many events. I did a few events abroad in Europe where I'd got to know various different importers, and they would just contact me and offer me a car, but generally they would be basic Group N cars, so not capable of an outright victory. But we had some fun doing that for a couple of years. But yes, after 1990, the only events I did were just things for fun. And I did 4 or 5 years of circuit racing in club saloons as well, mainly just because it was something I'd always wanted to do, and I really enjoyed the time doing that.
Wow. Well, do you know what? I feel like we could almost have a Legends program, because we always run out of time, and we've kind of run out of time with this one. Would you come back and perhaps do a bit of a longer program with us? Because I think that we've only scratched the surface, and with only an hour long program, we're always fighting for time. Would it be good to do perhaps something a little bit longer, a little bit more focused, with yourself and what you've done? Would you be good with that?
Yes, that'd be quite good.
Okay,
you know, well, to actually do that, providing I can remember all of it. At my age, I'm getting to the point where I forget a lot of it.
We'll give you plenty of notice, don't worry. Terry Cabe, you've been a legend for coming on, and I do genuinely want to get you back because there's so much I wanted to ask you about, but as ever with an hour-long programme, we're always a little bit pushed. But thank you for joining us this evening. We'll get something to die, we'll get you back, and we'll just put our feet up and we'll just listen to your story. Is that good?
Really good, yeah, and thanks very much. Nice to talk to you then, Ryan.
Thank you.
Thanks, Terry. Take care.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks. Bye.
There you go. That was Terry Cabe. And I think we lost kind of a few minutes at the top of the show when we were messing about trying to get Skype to play ball with us. But anyway, I do genuinely want to get him back because I love that period. I love the idea of test drivers as well. I think there's something quite unique. I know Ryan's done a little bit of it. I called you Brian. That's my business partner. I know Ryan's done a little bit of it. But, yeah, I think it'd be great to get somebody like Terry back, really, because, as I say, he's got a host of stories, especially doing gravel notes and things like that. So it'd be great to have him back on. But one man who we are going to have on, and we've squeezed him on right at the last, is Craig Thornley. And all being well, if I slide the fader up any time about now, we'll have Craig Thornley. We'll have Craig.
Hello.
Craig, can you hear us?
I can. You're in a goldfish bowl, it sounds like, for me.
Unfortunately, you sound like you're in a goldfish bowl, so I'm going to drop you and bring you back in a second, okay?
Yeah. Okay, okay.
Okay. Do you know what? That always happens, doesn't it, Ray?
Yeah, it does. It does. It happens sometimes, doesn't it? This is the wonder of technology. But
the wonders of live radio. I think that's what people have to remember as well. The people who listen to it on the podcast never get this stuff. This is what's quite good about it, because my wonderful engineer, who does all the audio engineering for us, Alistair, who does 10 chicken doo-doo into chicken salad for me on quite a regular basis, is going to get this, and you won't get, if you're listening on the podcast, you won't even know what's gone on. In fact, you'll be wondering what I'm even making reference to. That's what's beautiful about the joys of doing a podcast and not doing stuff live. But yeah, I'm going to get Craig back right now, he says, all being well, if we can get Craig to join us now.
And it's been a pretty interesting year for Craig. I mean, Craig's another man with a lot of rallying experience. We talked to Terry with an extensive career, but Craig's got over 25 years of international rallying experience. But I think he's certainly experienced some new events and new experiences in rallying this year.
I think you're not far wrong there, but I think we've got him back now. Craig, can you hear us?
I can hear you now, boys.
Fantastic. Thank you, God, for that. Craig, we apologise because we lost kind of 7 minutes at the beginning of the show, so we've been a little bit tight. So first and foremost, I'll take my bollocking for getting your championship wrong on the chin. So if you can,
you've got another one as well. Unloyal car drivers. I've 23 years of Ryan and 25 years of Charlie Payne to put up with.
Well, yeah, all right, fair dude. But to be fair, Ryan did come to defend you the moment
yeah,
I said
Ryan's
that.
Defense, Ryan did stick up for me there. I'm pleased to hear that.
Absolutely. Listen, before we go any further, put me straight. You are now an African champion.
Yeah, you've obviously got the WRC, and then below the WRC, you've got the FIA Championships, the regional. So you've got ERC, European Championship, the African Championship, the Middle East Championship, and the Asian Pacific. And I've just won the African Championship.
Now, as a Yorkshireman, I wouldn't have put any money on finding a Yorkshireman in Uganda. So tell us a little bit about how that came about.
Mark Higgins and myself have been working with Kenyan driver Jesse Katty in an MML run, John Easton from Daventry, Mitsubishi Evo 10, full R4 spec. We've been developing his base notes, and Mark's been helping with his setup of the car. And the guy's coming on leaps and bounds, and he's just won the African Championship, the first time a Kenyan's won the African Championship since 1984. And he's going to be the first Kenyan, hopefully this weekend, if he finishes in the top eight in his next round of the Kenyan Championship, to win the Kenyan Championship and the African Championship in the same year.
As you said, and it's a proper FIA championship you've won. Does that mean you get to go to the FIA prize giving, by the way, in Monaco?
It does, in December. Wow. It's in Paris, unfortunately, Monaco. But I'll be there with Mr. Ogier and hopefully Lewis Hamilton and anybody else that gets an FIA award. I can sell you a ticket, Ryan, if you want one.
Yeah, well, maybe we'll do a deal there. But yeah, fantastic. to go to an FIA Awards as an award winner is definitely an amazing experience. And as we were just saying before you came on, I mean, you've been competing at international level for 25 years. Your first time in Africa, really. How have you found it? And how have you found the rallies? And what how do you compare each rally? You know, what have you seen on the different rallies you've done this year?
Well, everyone's been unique. I mean, the first one we did was South Africa, Sasol Rally. It's the only rally that we didn't win overall. We finished sixth overall, but won the ARC part of it. We then went to Zambia and became the first Kenyans there to win in Zambia. And then we went to Rwanda and won in Rwanda. We were leading in Tanzania, but it's a rally that he has won before, but we ended up rolling, whilst leading by 3.5 minutes. And then we've just won Uganda this last weekend. And like Uganda, we had 33 and 44 K stages and 65, 70 pages per stage. They were very technical and very twisty stages. And then you go to Rwanda where we were averaging 90 miles an hour. It was like 8 pages for a 25K stage.
So, very, very different events and very fast. We spoke to Tapio Laukkanen a couple of weeks ago. They're very fast average speeds on some of the rallies as well, aren't they?
Yeah, Rwanda was crazy. And Tanzania, we had a 48K stage that we did in 27 minutes. And that included stopping for a minute and 15 seconds to help another ARC competitor's car had caught fire. We stopped and gave him a fire extinguisher. And I timed it off the GoPro and it was a minute and 15 and we still did the stage in 27 minutes.
So, I mean, you've done obviously very different rallies over the years. What would be your highlights of the rallies you've done? What would be your personal favourites and why would you pick that event?
Well, there's a couple. The obvious one and the one that really got to me was, unfortunately, Ryan, with Mark Higgins when I won the Manx. but second to that is like the year we had in the Mitsubishi. I mean, we were so close to being British champions that year. Mark just managed to pip us. And, you know, to win the Pirelli and the track rod, you know, it's just unfortunate we ended upside down on Ulster and I'd be off on Manx. And we'd have won that championship that year. But that's the year I was so gutted for the pair of us. It was just a real hard year that year, wasn't it?
Yeah, I do seem to remember that one, yeah. Tony's mentioned some of the drivers you've sat alongside. And talking of award winners, you did an event with 250 world champion Loris Capirossi.
I did the old Suzuki Swift with Loris, and same year I did the Jim Clark with Neil Pringles from Travis as well.
So certainly a wide variation of drivers, and obviously from when you started, the equipment's changed quite a lot. I mean, what's the difference now co-driving in modern world rally cars to the Mark II Escorts that you started in?
Well, I mean, the most obvious thing is, well, there's two obvious things, really. The one is the safety, the roll cages and the preparation of the cars has just gone up in leaps and bounds. And the other thing is the grip and the speed. You know, it's like in a Group N car that's been driven very competitively, what it's like on the inside and what it looks like on the outside. And it's the same with the R4 car. The R4 car is another step up from that Group N car that we had.
Craig?
The R4 car, I'm very impressed with it.
Craig? This is the moment where I say to you, so when you go to the FIA Awards, can we get you back on after you've been? Because we've run out of time.
Right, all right. Good.
Thanks, mate.
See you later.
See you soon. Take care. Ta-ta.
Yes. Bye.
Good. Bye.
Absolute left at wall and absolute king. Absolute king for 200.
This is Absolute Rally with Tony Simpson and Ryan Champion.
And that's the end of the show, right? So, thanks for joining us. Same time next week?
Yep, we'll be here.
I'll see you soon. Take care.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, folks. Spread the word. Absolute Rally. Tweet us at @absolute_rally. We'll be back next week.